Springtime savings are in full bloom, all in the Kroger app. Buy one, get one free on flavorful fresh Tyson chicken during our full line sale. Then mix or match during our 99 cent sale and get Kraft mac and cheese, Campbell's soup, or Bar S Franks for 99 cents each when you buy five or more, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
It's another edition of the Talking Mets podcast here on this Sunday, April the 8th, 2018. Of course, I'm your host, Mike Silva, and you can check out the show all the time over at our friends at MetsMorizedOnline.com. Send me a tweet at Mike Silva Media, and you can get the show on iTunes, SoundCloud, Stitcher, pretty much whatever podcasting service you desire. Also, check us out at The Grueling Truth, which is a member of the iHeart Radio and Network. Hope everybody's doing well. Certainly you can't get much better of a start than the New York Mets have gotten off to over the last week. Really one of these rare podcasts where you can go on, and what is there really to analyze other than keep on cruising, right? And that's kind of what we're going to do today. A little bit of a different day of radio. Brian Wright, new author, just came out with a book. It's actually being launching tomorrow, April 9th, Mets and Tens, Best and Worst of an Amazing History. And what Brian has done is take the Mets history and kind of put it into top 10 lists, something a little bit different to get. And I know all the time I talk about sports debate, but this is somewhat of a situation where we're trying to get some sports debate into a somewhat intelligent kind of dialogue in an era of really bad radio and really stupid debate all over social media. I think Brian's trying to bring that together in a different way. So Brian will be joining me in just a couple of minutes, and we'll talk about the launch of his new book, the release of his book, Mets and Tens, Best and Worst of an Amazing History. Now, Mets are on tonight at 8 p.m., so this is one of those rare podcasts where we can't fully wrap up the week, but regardless of what happens tonight, and it will be really interesting to see as Matt Harvey's pitching against Tanner Roark, and I mean the whole week has pretty much been in lousy baseball weather, whether it was when the Mets were playing at Citi Field or down in Washington, D.C. So an 8 o'clock game with the way the weather's been here on the East Coast, Northeast, I know that's the Mid-Atlantic down in Washington, D.C., probably is going to be a favorable climate for the pitchers. With that said, Matt Harvey pitched pretty well his first outing. I know that that was in a very cold and dreary Citi Field. So as things begin to normalize, I'm curious to see, is Matt Harvey back? What version of Matt Harvey can the Mets just expect? And like I said in last week's podcast, you know, this is great. Mets are off to a 6-1 start. I really can't sit back and complain about too much. I mean, the biggest issue this team has right now is holding runners on. And that will be an issue, and that will be something that if teams have noticed that you can run on the catchers, and part of the reason you can run on the catchers is that the starting pitchers still are struggling with holding runners on, that's going to be something that has to be addressed because walks are going to turn into doubles very quickly, and it's a lot harder for a pitcher to get out of a runner on second, no-out situation versus a runner on first situation. That goes without saying, but I said this, and this has been a theme all spring. It's been a theme all winter. And I knew as the Mets made some, I thought, very stealth, under-the-radar type moves because they were signing players that weren't the cream of the free agent class, but I thought the players that fit in well to what they were trying to do. I kept saying there's a lot of talent on this team, and everybody kept talking about what a mess the Mets were and how bad they were. And I said, you know, you can't luckily go to the World Series. What happened in 2015 from July 31st to the end of the year, you can't just say that was an anomaly because they did make the playoffs in 2016, even though they played poorly, and I could make the argument, like I said, that they, you know, the competition played down to a level which allowed them to hang around. The problem you've had with the Mets over the last couple of years is that you just haven't felt that this is a team that was well prepared and equipped to start the season. You always felt that they came into the season and it was almost like spring training just started. Well, now let's kick it in. That they used the entire spring as a way to chill and hang out. And you heard the mantra that they're a second half club, so they would use the first 3 or 4 months to get into it. And quite simply, you can't win like that. The way the Mets went to the World Series, the way the Mets won in 2015, is not the right way to do it. The way they got to the playoffs in 2016, basically starting their season the second week of August, is not the right way to do it. It's a low percentage success rate. And then last year, things never got off to a good start. And what you're seeing here is a team that has come out, and they still have the issues, like we've been saying. You know, you don't know how they're going to stay healthy. There isn't a heck of a lot of speed on this club. Yeah, the opposition's probably going to take a base or two as a stolen base. Defensively, I think they've shown to be a little bit better than in the past, especially when they have guys like Lagares. I think Frazier has been a huge upgrade. Rosario seems a little bit more crisp than he was when he came up last year. Even Adrian Gonzalez as a first baseman is going to be an improvement. I mean, Cabrera hasn't been too bad at second. I don't think the outfield is bad at all. You know, they have some limitations, but they are certainly going out there making a statement, and they're playing each game with a sense of urgency. And they're not going to be at a seventh game of the World Series urgency. There's going to be lulls throughout the year. But they have gone out, and they made it a point through this first 7 to 10 days to say, hey, things are going to be different. They want to set the tone. It reminds me, and I know it's somewhat of a lazy comparison because it's easy, of how they did it in 2006. Look, the 2006 team got off to a great start. They lulled out a little bit and flattened out a little bit. Then they went on that huge road trip. What was it, a 9-1 road trip in June? And they rode that road trip and that early season success the rest of the year. And they won a division based on that. And any time that team went out there and had to make a statement, they did, whether it was beating the Braves, beating the Phillies, sweeping the Phillies in Philadelphia. When they needed to win a game during that regular season, they did. And so far, this team has done that. Now, there's a lot of baseball to play, and the Washington Nationals are not just going to roll over tonight and allow the Mets to sweep them. And let's remember, Daniel Murphy's not in the lineup. They had a peculiar ejection in Anthony Rendon. But I think that you have to take notice of the seriousness of how the Mets are going about their work. And you also have to like, and I know that it's real easy to look good as a manager when pretty much your entire bullpen has an ERA of zero. I mean, right now, Hansel Robles is really the only one that's given up any runs. Yeah, you got Sewald and Rahm give up some runs against the Cardinals last Sunday, but everybody else is perfect. You've lost Anthony Swarzak in that, so you're down a man in that. You know, your starting rotation has been pretty good. And that's the funny part. They've been pretty good. DeGrom and Syndergaard haven't been great. Actually, Syndergaard is probably performed the worst out of all the starters through the first turn of the rotation. So it's hard to criticize Mickey Callaway, but you can see everybody is aware of their role. They understand what's expected of them. There's no confusion. You know, here's Jairus Familia. I don't know how cool he would have been in prior years coming in this early for a five-out save. And to hear him talk about the importance of the five-out save this early shows me he understands sending a message to the Washington Nationals, winning these type of games when you're on the road, when you're hard fought, when you come back a couple of times. Winning those games is important. And you could see how serious that this team is taking it. So really good signs early. They've passed an early first test, and that is the biggest thing. This team hasn't been passing tests at all over the last couple of years, at all. It was a consistent gripe of me that they'd go to Washington and get clobbered, and then you'd always hear, well, we still have a lot of time. We have to do better. You never really felt they'd go out and pass any of the big key tests throughout their season. They would certainly go on runs, and they would certainly beat up on sub-500 clubs, but they never would head-to-head pass those tests. And I think this is the best test series I've seen this team pass since late 2015 when they went into Washington and swept the Nationals. Now, it's very early, like I said, So this is, you know, part of it is somewhat of an overstatement. And, you know, you could take the numbers and you know, you see the numbers, the most strikeouts through seven games in Major League history. The pitching staff has an ERA of 2.14, whip of one. You know, they've held opponents to a 181 batting average, the lowest in baseball. Their on-base percentage offensively is number two. I mean, look, some of this with the pitching has to do with the weather being awful. Let's see how this goes in Arizona. In a controlled environment with the ball flying out. You know, let's see on the West Coast trips and when you have a tired staff, when you've played 11 games in 12 days and you don't have all the days off. But regardless, a fine start, you see a seriousness and a professionalism and a focus that has not been present for a long time and maybe never was present outside of a few smattering times in the Tyree Collins era. So that's where you're at. Way too early to get too deep into this Mets start other than feel good about it. It's a great way to kick off the 2018 baseball season, and there's a lot of solid signs. And I'd be very curious to see how this momentum, this early momentum, how they capitalize on that and continue that as they play the Nationals tonight, and then they go on to Miami. As I said last week, the fact that they're winning with DeGrom and Syndergaard pitching, those are the games that you know that they could beat anybody, anywhere, anytime. It's the Harvey, the Lugo, the Vargas starts, Matt starts. Those are the starts that, you know, you need to see. What do they have there? What do they have the other 3 days out of five? And how competitive are they going to be? How are those pitchers going to keep them in ball games? And you got an affirmative answer yesterday with Steven Matz, who, as has been written about by a few of the columnists in this town, he's the wild card here. And I think he could be that, you know, Al Leiter, Jerry Kuzman type lefty for this rotation. I really do. If he stays healthy and he continues, as Mickey Callaway says, to pitch with conviction and really trust his stuff. So anyway, let's take a quick break. When we return, Brian Wright, Mets and Tens. Let's talk about this new book coming out and get into a little bit of some Mets debate and the top 10 list and things. Let's learn a little bit about what's going on with Brian Wright and his new project. We'll take a quick break. When we return, Brian Wright, Mets and Tens, right after this.
Hey, Mets fans. I'm going to let you in on a little secret. If you're looking for the best unbiased and independent coverage of the New York Mets, then look no further than MetsMerizedOnline.com. MetsMerized Online is the go-to place for comprehensive Mets coverage, including exclusive interviews, daily original articles, great weekly features, in-depth analysis, minor league reports, game-by-game breakdowns, and so much more. Find out why thousands of fans turn to MetsMerized Online every day to get the latest news and opinions about the Mets. Coming from an impressive staff of the most passionate fans and skilled writers ever assembled, all in one place. Check it out for yourselves, Mets fans. Go to MetsMerizedOnline.com right now. That's Mets, M-E-R-I-Z-E-D, online.com, and get mesmerized today.
We're back, and joining us is Brian Wright. He is the author of a new book actually coming out in a couple of days, Mets and Tens, the best and worst of an amazing history. You could check out Brian on Twitter at BrianWright86. He's also on Facebook and Instagram. We'll get into that in a couple of minutes. Arcadia Pub and History Press, courtesy of those two houses, and Brian is with us now. Brian, welcome to the program. Good way to start off the 2018 baseball season. I had Skip Lockwood on last week talking about his book. I know a lot of books will be coming out. Keith Hernandez has a book coming out in the near future, a book about Davey Johnson. Lots of Mets stuff coming out. You are now in the middle of all that, and so far, a couple of days to go. Are you ready for your big book debut?
I'm as ready as I'll ever be. This is, you know, as you said, my first book. I was just checking Amazon before we spoke, and you know, you have one of those features, you know, if you want to buy this book, you can also buy this book, and it's mine combined with Keith Hernandez's book. It's the first time in my life I've ever been in the same lineup with Keith Hernandez, and probably the only time.
Well, you never know. He might follow you. He's on Twitter now. He might follow you on Twitter, so there's always a possibility about that. But a couple of things. First, so this is interesting. So there's been books about lists and things like that, and this looks to me like it might become a good debate book or a conversational book for Mets fans at the bar or when you're trying to kill some time during a blowout or before a game. Give me the motivation behind bringing this book together and putting this together. And why is this different for the Mets fans as they take a look at it on Amazon or at their local bookstore? Why would they want to purchase this book start next week?
Well, to answer your second question, it pretty much why they would want to buy it is just a different look at the history of the Mets. You know, most books about the Mets are chronological or, you know, they have, you know, a list of or the rundown of all the players or the greatest players. I figured I'd try to have a different perspective on the history of Mets baseball. So it's the entire history of the Mets kind of put together in the puzzle is put together in a different way, just in 30 different lists. The motivation behind it or the kind of the origin of it was actually back in the 2015 playoffs when Chase Utley broke the leg of Ruben Tejada at second base in the second game of that division series and for all intents and purposes got away with it. And that inspired me to think, well, where does Chase Utley now rank in the greatest, not that I was doing any rankings, but I was thinking in my head, where does he rank among the greatest villains in against the Mets? You know, is he more of a villain now than Chipper Jones? And that kind of accentuated once he didn't get suspended and then next year happened and he must hit a grand slam, it seemed like every game. That kind of said, and then I kind of started to think, well, you know, what are other top 10 lists I could do? And I had been writing off and on for other websites, worked for Bleacher Report, worked for a site called The Sports Daily, and most of my work there were top 10 lists. And I realized that this was kind of something, this kind of debate writing, and this is a silly way to put it, but writing that insights debate was something interesting. So the Mets are the one thing that I could write a book about to do it. So, you know, because people don't know who I am. So the only way to try to get my foot in the door in the book realm would be about the Mets. So I was intending to make it a self-published book. Arcadia and the History Press came through. I reached out to them. I think it was like January last year. And I'm fortunate enough that they took my idea. I did not think it would eventually get to this point.
It's really, listen, writing a book, I haven't done it. I've had friends who have done it. I'm sure you have friends in the business that have done it. It is a big undertaking no matter what, so I give you credit. And it takes a lot to pitch your idea and to get it published even harder. So good work on that. Now, here's something pretty cool. Jerry Kuzman's doing the foreword to the book. Why Jerry Kuzman? How'd you get him? And talk a little bit about that connection over there.
Yeah, so that connection started when I had a podcast of my own about 3.5 years ago. I started a baseball history podcast very modestly, did it on my own, produced it on my own, edited it on my own, just kind of for fun, kind of a hobby, which this book then turned into. The subject of one of my first few episodes was there was the Hall of Fame Veterans Committee vote or whatever they call it now for the era that Gil Hodges is in. And I said, well, I would like to get someone to talk about Gil Hodges. My dad suggested, I couldn't find, you know, Jerry Kuzman's phone number or email. He said, well, why don't you just write a letter, put your email address on there, and then if he's interested, he'll reach out to you. I sent the letter out, and about a week later, I look at my phone at work, and I see, you know, you see on your iPhone, it says, you know, Gmail. It says, like, who's sending you an email? It says, Jerry Kuzman. I go, what? I had to, like, shake my head. So was able to talk with him. And I'm trying to think when I actually reached out to him for the foreword. I guess it was about under a year ago. Just told him, you know, reminded him who I was, and he was all up for it. And in fact, I just sent him away a free copy of the book today in a small token of appreciation for what he did. And the selection of him, I guess, is a combination of he was easy to get to for me. I couldn't have to jump through hoops. And also because he's the best left-handed pitcher in Mets history, he's probably the most underrated player, pitcher or player in Mets history, just because when you pitch behind the shadow of Tom Seaver, you're going to be underrated, no matter how well you do. So in my opinion, he was a great choice, not just for ease of accessibility on my part, but also just in the general realm of Mets history.
You know, that's a great point. You took the words out of my mouth. I was going to say, you know, I'm looking at his numbers as we speak, and Jerry Kuzman, you're right, gets overlooked because of Tom Seaver. He gets overlooked in Mets history. I think a lot of times, and maybe it's because in this era you're dealing with a lot of people who come from a different or grew up in a different generation. People talk more about Al Leiter than Jerry Kuzman, but Jerry Kuzman's a very underrated player in Mets history. So, you know, I haven't had a chance to go through the book. Obviously, it's coming out on Monday. You know, you have 30 lists, like you said. But on that topic, you know, for me, just thinking as you're talking about Jerry Kuzman being underrated, I'm trying to think, what are some, you know, you always, you know, Mets fans tend to go to the negative. There's always the most overrated, the worst free agent signings, worst losses. Okay, that's I guess, part of some of the gut punches that the fan base has taken over the course of their history. But there's been quite a few players, I think, that do get overlooked at times. Sometimes Mets fans like guys like Joe McEwing better than maybe a Jerry Kuzman. I think of some other underrated players. John Olerud sometimes comes to mind for me. What about you? What other underrated players, you know, in the spirit of this kind of book, you know, give me a couple of topics that I guess they can, you know, the fans will get in the book that they'll appreciate. But on that, you know, underrated from that standpoint, because there's quite a few players I think that could fall into that category, like Jerry Kuzman.
Yeah, no, Jerry Kuzman, I think definitely. You said John Olerud. I totally agree with that. One of the lists. You know, a lot of these are top 10 lists, but also there are two lists about the all-time team and the all-time second team. I added a designated hitter just to make it 10. So it's, you know, the whole by position. It's numbered by position with, you know, pitcher being number one, of course. And John Olerud is on the second team at first base, backing up Keith Hernandez. And I thought that I was thinking about it. I said, well, you know, John Olerud or Carlos Delgado. Carlos Delgado is certainly worthy. But John Olerud, just the way he got on base so consistently, and I think, I don't know, thinking off the top of my head, he had some kind of streak. It was like 40 games of getting on base. But I think he had the highest batting average for a single season in Mets history. And another guy that I think is totally underrated from that same era is Edgardo Alfonso, kind of in the same vein of Jerry Kuzman playing behind Seaver. Alfonso had a lot of his career behind Piazza, and he got totally forgotten. And you know, was an all-star in 2000 and was really a valuable piece to that team when they made back-to-back playoff appearances in 99, 2000. And another person, I think, and you said Al Leiter, it's another person I think it's undervalued because of the era in which he pitched, that he was pitching in the steroid era, and his ERA doesn't look as good when compared to someone, you know, like Tom Seaver or even like John Matlack or Jerry Kuzman. But in that era, he was a great pitcher and very important to the Mets. And a last person I think it's, I don't want to say underrated, but I think just he gets scapegoated is Carlos Beltran. I think, you know, everyone remembers taking strike three in game seven of the 2006 NLCS. And he got injured a lot at the end before he was traded to the Giants. But I think that was that NLCS game. It's an easy he was an easy scapegoat for being the last out. But he was really he really did a lot for the Mets during his, I think it was at 7 years. I think he should go to the Hall of Fame. If he goes to the Hall of Fame, I think he'll be wearing a Mets cap.
That's a great point. You know, there's no playoffs. There's no collapses without Carlos Beltran. If they don't even get to be relevant during those seasons without Carlos Beltran, that is a great point. Brian Wright with me, author of the book, Mets in Tens. It's coming out on Monday. You could check out Brian on Twitter at BrianWright86. You could also get him on Instagram at BAWright86. He's on Facebook. Mets in Tens 10S is the Facebook page. And it looks like it's going to be some interesting Mets debate. And the season's underway, and we're talking about the 2018 team. But it's always fun throughout the baseball season when there's so much downtime to, you know, look at some of these books that are coming out and discuss it and have intellectual. Looks like this will be an intellectual type of Mets debate. For you, what was one of the toughest lists that you had to put together? What was one that you put out there and said, you know, this is a lot tougher than I thought it was going to be, and you really grinded it out and made something out of it?
Well, yeah, the one list, and going back to Kuzman, he was an easy number one, was the Southpaw starters list. Left-handed pitchers. That was one list that I've looked back on. I don't know if this answers the question adequately, but I looked back on it and said, well, I would have changed certain, you know, portions of this list. And, you know, maybe saying that hurts my credibility, but in my opinion, it's the whole spirit of what this book is about. You have a list and you see it and you go, well, someone will read it and go, well, I think it should be different. Or I guess me looking at it again, I said, well, I think that should be different. I think when you have beyond Kuzmin, I think there's Leiter, Matlack, Ojeda, Cid Fernandez, Glavin, Viola, Santana. That was kind of a list where I think I could have, I'm not going to reveal everything, but I could have arranged it differently. I think I put, you know, and Santana a little low, Cid Fernandez might be a little low. So that was one that I strained with. And I think if I had to do that over again, I would do it a little differently. And like I said, that's the spirit of the whole book. I'm like a reader now, looking at my work since I finished it a few months ago and going like, wow, that should be higher. That guy should be, he did this, you know, he had, you know, his ERA was one of the best at Chase Stadium. I think Fernandez had one of the best ERAs at Chase Stadium. He might be, you know, he might be above Ojeda. So that was the list I think that was tough. And another one, just because there wasn't a big difference between them, was the single game hitting performance list. There, you know, no one's had four home runs in a game for the Mets, so you couldn't have one. You didn't have one particular game that stood out in terms of hitting performances. So there were more than 10 that were worthy of being on the top 10 list. So that was tough to narrow down.
Yeah, and Cid Fernandez, you know, we just were talking about underrated players. I mean, three times in his career led the league in least amount of hits per nine innings, and the one loss record wasn't bad, but. I mean, this is a guy that very easily should have won 20 games a couple of times. And I was talking recently to Doug Sisk, one of his former teammates, and I said, you know, I always felt Cid was, from one standpoint, the best pitcher on that staff, even better than Doc. And he says, mm-hmm. You know something? Davey Johnson used to say he's the guy that you would bet could on any given night get a no-hitter. And if you look at the peripherals, he would be appreciated much more today with more data, more advanced metrics. And I would guess that while you go through a lot of these analysis to do this book, as you have access now to Baseball Reference and Fangraphs and Baseball Prospectus and all different types of analysis, I'm wondering, do you get a better appreciation of players that you grew up watching and look back and go, you know, my perception of him is so much different now as I look back and look at the breakdowns and look at the analysis and look at how the game is viewed today?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, as you said, Fernandez, I think Fernandez might be an ace today because his big hangup was like in the seventh inning, he'd, you know, tire out. Well, today he'd be gone anyway. So, he might be an ace. And to go to your point about looking at the greater statistical analysis, I mean, you do get an appreciation of the guys like, for me being now 30 years old, guys like Edgardo Alfonso and John Olerud, who you appreciate when they play, but you didn't realize their contributions in terms of getting on base and how well they feel. So that those kind of things, and even guys back, going back to underrated players or just people that are forgotten, like the early years of the Mets. I mean, the Mets were nothing to write home about. They were popular only in the sense that they were a new team and they were lovable. But there were players that did fairly well in very adverse circumstances. When you talk about, you know, someone like Al Jackson or Roger Craig, who, you know, they didn't have much run support. I mean, they weren't the best pitchers, but they were better. They would have been better on other teams. So it's interesting to try to compare different eras. Well, how does, you know, someone from 1965 compare to someone from 2005? That's kind of difficult to do, and in a way you kind of have to make your own judgment. But these new statistical analysis, you know, like you said, Fangraphs and Baseball Reference, make that a little easier.
Era did, you know, obviously you're a younger guy. I grew up watching the Mets, started watching late 80s, and in the 90s is kind of like, okay, you know, that's my era. I don't know the 70s. Even early 80s when Davey Johnson first took over, I was 7 years old, so it was hard for me to say, okay, I can remember that. What era, as you did some research on history, would you have liked to maybe have gone back and been yourself now with the mature analysis baseball fan, like, and maybe go back and relive? Is there one that you really would, you know, you would dive it into and say, now that would have been pretty cool to be around during that time?
I do. It's kind of interesting. I would love to the team that I gravitated to right away was the 86 team. My dad had the 86 highlight video. He had the history of the Mets, the 25th anniversary video. And that was when I was 5 or 6 years old. That's what I clung to, and made me a Mets fan. And then you watch the real thing when you're 5 or 6 in 92 or 93, and you wonder, where did it all go? I later had to find that out. But that if I could like be around the team in the '80s with the mid '80s, especially mid to late '80s, the just the brashness of that team and how good they were, despite, you know, not totally fulfilling expectations, winning just one World Series, that would be kind of fun. I mean, I have a debate with my dad. My dad would rather relive 1969, which he was around for, than 1986, because 1969 was just so unexpected, and 1986 there was all that pressure to win. So it would be interesting to try to maybe live through like 1987 or 1988, and might be different today. There might have been a lot more pressure. I mean, I know there was pressure back on the team back then. But trying to live through it and trying to say, oh, you know, this team needs to come through. They may not have the window of opportunity may be closing. That might cause a little angst, as opposed to maybe the 60s or, you know, 69, especially with just everything coming together at one point.
Yeah, that's a good point, because seasons like 97, you know, where there wasn't expectations, even to a certain degree, 2006, where you thought they'd be better, but nobody thought they'd be so dominant during the regular season. And then obviously the expectations enhanced and the playoffs and what have you. But some of those seasons stand out and are close to fans' hearts because they were that innocent climb, so to speak. So to a certain degree, 2015 was that. No one
Oh,
expected
yeah.
that team to go to the
No.
World Series. Is there a season, like, for me, forget that for a minute. For me, 1999 is always that season. Forget the championship runs or World Series appearances. 1999 has always been that season where I always look back. So that was a fun season. It ended poorly. That team could have won a championship. Maybe some say should have beaten the Braves, even though they were down 3-0. You look back, that was a really tough offensive team. The pitching wasn't great, the starting pitching, but the bullpen was good. That season always, to me, is always close to my heart. Is there a season like that for you? I don't know if you get into this in the book, but is there a season like that for you that you look back and maybe it's not the 86 of the list, but it's fun for you personally, for Brian Wright?
Yeah, 1999 was the first, it's probably my favorite team if I had to make a determination. There's no list on here that's personal, but if I had to say my number one team would be 1999, because that was the first playoff team that I could remember. Just the way that, and it's funny, if it happened now, the way that season ended, where they were a game behind the Braves and then Chipper Jones single-handedly beat them and they were in perilous danger of missing the playoffs again, I don't know if I'd want to go through that. But being a kid, it was fun to go through,
It's
and that whole
fun.
playoff
It's fun
series was
looking
really.
back now. It wasn't fun living through the 7-game losing streak. I
I mean,
do remember
watching,
that.
I'm like,
That
oh my
wasn't
God, it
fun.
would have had a heart attack. You know, all this, you know, you thought they were, you would have put them dead and buried 7, 8 different times in that during that 3 week stretch. But 99 was, yeah, 99 was probably my number one. You talked about 2006 was the most fun I had for a season, just because it was over so easily, so quickly. There was no pennant race. It obviously did not end well, but there was no pennant race. So that was kind of fun, just to watch the team and to know that you pretty much had it in the bag. And then 2007 happened, so maybe nothing is safe. But 2015, specifically July 31st through early November of 2015, was the most enjoyable time I've ever had being a Mets fan. That was the most satisfying time. And maybe it's more satisfying for me, because I live just outside of Washington, D.C., and you had
Wow.
the Nationals and their fans kind of being a little chesty, and the players especially, kind of thinking like, okay, well, the Mets, they're just, you know, we'll take care of them eventually. And of course, they never did. And being there, being in that 3-game series, which they came back around Labor Day, came back in every game, that was being present for those 3 games was as enjoyable as I've ever had being a Mets fan.
That's a great point. A couple of things on that. You know, 2006 to me was a love affair between the fans and the team. And when Beltran struck out, that love affair turned sour. It's like they fell in love with this team. Then the fans, you know, this happens. I mean, teams get beat. When they got beat, it set a negative tone for the next couple of years, the collapses, what have you. 2015, a lot of times to me, was the reverse of what the Phillies did to the Mets in 07, where the Mets really in 07, like, ah, go away, go away. They'll go away. And they never really went away, they hung around. And then eventually the Phillies said, well, if you don't want this thing, we'll take it. And the Mets were like, no, we'll take it. And then they couldn't get it into gear. And the Mets basically did that to the Nats. And that series that you mentioned, the Labor Day series in Washington, to me, that was the reverse of when the Phillies came to Shea Stadium in late 07, said,
Yes.
we're going to take this, forget about it. And you walk away shell-shocked, and you never recover from that. Even though it got a little tighter after that, the Nats made a small little run. They never recovered from that. It always was satisfying from that standpoint because it was like revenge against a different team. But like I saw this movie before, I kept saying to myself, and I know how it ends, and this time it might end in the right way for a Mets fan.
Yeah, 2007, I remember that series you were talking about, and that was a little different because it was the Mets still up, but you could see them teetering. But you said, okay, well, they can get it back together, and as you said, they never did. It was like watching a train wreck in front of your eyes. You were just wondering how they were going to lose this game, and they usually lost it by the bullpen. And that last game, I mean, the second to last game they won, but the vital organs of the team were no longer functioning. I mean, that last game with Tom Glavine was just, it was over before it started almost. You know, as you said, 2006 looks a lot worse. I'm using loosely when you see what happened in the subsequent years, 2007, 2008, and then that era of being in the wilderness. If the Mets won the World Series in 2008, no one would really care about 2006, and no one would be blaming Carlos Beltran for a strikeout. So the postscript tells you how the actual event is judged.
No, that's a fair point. As we wrap up here, and I have Brian Wright with me, Mets and Tens coming out on Monday. Check it out. Go to Amazon. Go to your bookstore. We'll let Brian. I know Brian's gonna have an event locally here in New York, so we'll let him plug that. But I guess we'll go to the negative side. There's plenty of negative always to talk about, but are there any lists like? I know you mentioned villains earlier, but you know, most overrated players, worst managers, worst seasons. We've talked a lot of positives, and that's good, but I know that you probably have some lists that you had to go through that might bring up some painful memories to Mets fans as they go through the book and Mets history.
Yeah, there's one entire section of the book, so it's broken down into 8 sections, like beginnings, pitching, hitting, but there is one list or one section just called anguish. So it has villains, most disappointing teams, devastating losses, and busts. And there's also another list that has managers. I guess you can make your own judgment on who's the worst. I mean, it's only a top 10. So the anguish chapter, I joke with someone else in another interview. I had to write it laying on a couch, almost like I was going to the therapist, even though it was fairly, I want to say easy, relatively easy to do. Nothing of this book was easy, but it was relatively easy to write that part for some weird reason. Maybe I have something wrong with me that it's better for me to write the bad stuff than the great stuff. So it was, for instance, you know, disappointing teams. We can even go back to last year. I mean, that's on the list. I mean, I had a list all set, and then you watch 2017 unfold, and you realize you have to amend that top 10 list. And then as far as devastating losses are concerned, we talked about 2006, Game 7 of the NLCS. That's up there, along with that 1988 NLCS Game 4, 3 games of that 2015 World Series, the Game 6 of the 99 NLCS, a lot of more recent bad losses.
Yeah, no, for sure. Hey, worst managers in history, did Terry Collins make it at all, or am I dealt? Because everyone gets mad. I keep bringing up Terry Collins, but I would actually put him up there in the top 3. I'll tell you that.
Maybe I'm harsher than you are. I have Terry Collins number 5. He's behind, and I'll just give it away. I mean, he's behind Gil Hodges, Davey Johnson, Bobby V, and I think Willie Randolph is ahead of him. Yeah. So Terry Collins. I know your feelings about Terry Collins. I could go both ways on him. I mean, I think as I write it up, I basically said like at one, you know, you could kind of say, well, he righted the ship during a bad time. I mean, he was just kind of the captain of a sinking ship. I guess it was kind of coming up from being sinking when he had to tread water after all the financial issues. But then, you know, when they got good, he was a liability. 2017, by that time, it was time for a new voice. Terry Collins, I don't think he was capable of a manager. He showed that twice before in Anaheim and Houston. That doesn't mean that he's not capable of being in a baseball organization. You know, I can't be a CEO, but I could be in a corporation somewhere else. It's not a shot at his like intelligence. It's just some people just aren't cut out to be managers, and I just didn't didn't think Terry Collins, with his mishandling of bullpens and his forgetting to put Michael Conforto in a lineup, I just didn't think he had the acumen to be a baseball manager.
Yeah, well, this sounds like a fun book. I think it's going to create a lot of fun debate. Obviously, check Brian out on Twitter at BrianWright86. You have an event May 19th. Want to let the fans know about it? And what's next for you? So you got this book. Obviously, you're going to be promoting this book. Is this the first of many? Do you want to tease anything? Let everybody know where they could get your events and what they could expect from you over the next few months. As look, baseball season's off to a good start. It's only 1 week. If the Mets play well and are in the some sort of race, it'll be good for book sales. You know that. What's next for Brian Wright?
Well, my future plans are to be determined. I would like to try this book thing again in another capacity, whether it's the Mets or something a little more general with regards to baseball. So that's still up in the air. I'm still trying to feel out different ideas. Also have ideas aside from just writing. So we'll see what happens. But if they follow me on social media, I will let them know. My event on May 19th, it's at Turn of the Corkscrew in Rockville Center. I believe it's at 2:00. And that's just a book discussion. I think it's me and a few other book writers with Arcadia. We'll be discussing our nonfiction titles. So probably more events to come. Again, I'll certainly make people aware on social media. But there really is a lot to be excited about, both personally and with regards to the Mets. I think this will be a good season. I think it will be a playoff season. I'm expecting it to be a playoff season, whether it's a division title, who knows? But then again, in 2015, I didn't think it was going to be a division title at the least. So you just have to watch and just enjoy the ride.
Brian, this look, anybody who's done a book, and I haven't, like I think I told you before the program, I haven't. This is a tough thing. You should feel good about it, putting something like this together, and it certainly seems like it's going to be interesting for the fans, Mets fans, obviously. But obviously baseball fans sometimes like to look at other teams and how things are looked at. So good luck with it. Let's catch up again and be well, all righty?
Thanks so much, Mike. I really appreciate you having me on.
And that's Brian Wright. Interesting stuff, Mets and Tens, and you can get that on Amazon, and you can go on Twitter, at BrianWright86, Mets and Tens is the book, and some interesting stuff to debate. I know sometimes everybody, especially as you get into social media and the annals of Twitter or even any other kind of social media site, the debate could get silly and stupid, but that was intelligent. I think there'll be some interesting things that come out of that, and it'd be really interesting to see the fan reaction to what is something different. You got the Davey Johnson book coming out. Keith Hernandez is on Twitter. He's got a book coming out. We had Skip Lockwood taking us back in time last week. That seemed to get a good review from the listeners. So we got a lot of stuff coming up as we talk about the current Mets team. We look back. We look at different types of projects that are out there. That's what's good about the baseball season, that you can go and do a ton of stuff. So thank you to Brian Wright for joining us. And let's take a quick break. Let's wrap up. Give you the information about my appearance on WLIE later tonight, and we'll chat soon. So we'll be back right after this.
Rounded down to first. Gonzalez got it, and the ball game is over. Jay Reese Familia, five up and five down for the save. The Mets come from behind twice. They've now won four in a row and six of their first seven to start the season. They've taken the first two from the Nats as they win today 3-2.
Well, Steven Matz pitched the first five. They used five relievers to go the final four. And the Mets get a big win here.
And they win again without the home run, a team that relied on home runs. And Gary mentioned it, which we've seen a big trend here. This team has come from behind, and it came from behind twice today. So I just like what I see from this ball club right now. And the Mets are off to a red hot start.
Final thoughts and good stuff from Brian Wright. Really fun segment. Always like get into that. There's more books coming out, and we're going to be, Mets fans have some really cool books coming out. You got a Keith Hernandez book coming out. You got a Davey Johnson book coming out.
We talked with Skip Lockwood last week, Brian Wright. So some good material to kick off the baseball season very early on here in 2018. So cool stuff from Brian Wright. Tonight, WLIE, you guys know Rich Catino has the New York Sports Wrap. I've been a guest on there a couple of times. I will be a guest host on the WLIE Sports Wrap. So if you want to tune in, certainly check it out. Tonight at 8:30, I'll be hosting from 8:30 to 10 p.m. Rich's show. Rich will be calling in from Washington, D.C. He's on assignment down there covering the Mets and the Nationals. He will be calling in. I think he's going to try to get some audio from a couple of Mets players. I've heard maybe Michael Conforto and Jose Reyes, so we'll see. Obviously, it's on during the Mets game, so if you want to tune down the ESPN broadcast and listen to a little talk, a little sports talk with me, that'd be great. Now, keep in mind, you guys listen to me, and you're listening to the Talking Mets podcast. So, yes, this is going to be very a heavy baseball-related show. I've been thinking about it, and I know the Rangers fired Alain Vigneault, and there's other things going on with the Knicks a little bit. NCAA tournament just wrapped up. But to me, the Mets and the Yankees and kicking off opening week and talking about them is going to be how I dominate the show and chat a lot with you guys. So it will be some Yankee talk on there. Chris Corelli of SNY will be joining me later on in the program to talk Yankees so you can get a little feel of that. And that'll be fun. And I know Rich is going to pop on from Washington, D.C. during the game to chat about the Mets and this quick start. And who knows, maybe there'll be some other updates along the way. You know, it's only about 3 o'clock here recording this podcast on Sunday. So about 5 hours before game time, and we'll see what happens. So anyway, want to thank everybody for tuning in here. Of course, want to thank our friend Brian Wright for joining me today, and check out his book, Mets and Tens. Really good stuff over there. Of course, you can check us out all the time at MetsMorizedOnline.com. You can send me a tweet at Mike Silva Media. You can get the show on iTunes, SoundCloud, Stitcher, pretty much whatever podcasting service you desire. Leave me a review on iTunes. Much appreciated. And you can get me on The Grueling Truth, which is part of the iHeart Radio Network. I'm your host, Mike Silva. Enjoy the rest of your Sunday. I'll see you tonight on WLIE. Check it out, WLIE, WLIE540AM.com. This is going to be live at 8:30. Be back. Take care.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.